Blog Talk Radio.
Boss Lady Publishing.
Oh man, I'm tired. I'm sleepy. I've been working all day. I didn't catch my afternoon nap that I always pray to get every day. Like I'm taking a nap today. I swear I'm taking it. I'm taking it. I don't care what's happening. Absolutely not. I make that promise to myself every day, and every day I just keep letting myself down. One of these days, I'm telling you, I'm going to catch that nap.
I wish I could get a midday nap, Nene.
Oh, man, I know you do. If you just, like, climb under your desk, Miss Tony, act like you're looking for paper clips, just spill a couple of them down there. Just, like, when your boss comes and tries to say, oh, man, I was looking for them paper clips. You know what I'm saying? Like, spill them underneath the desk, like, a whole bunch. And then when he catches you asleep, you just be like, oh, here it is. Just yell out, here it is. He'd be like, well, what? I said, oh, man, trying to get this pencil. Yeah, put some pencils under there. Like, oh.
And now you putting something in my head right now.
Let me come to your job and find you sleeping under the desk, Miss Tony. It's going to be an outrage.
I know.
Good
hey,
evening, live from hair and makeup.
Hey, Bebo.
What's going on?
I didn't know. I knew I had passed you in the hallway, but I wasn't quite sure, like, were you going to come past the studio? Because I know at the other end of the hallway, it's not a green room, but it's something else going on down there, so I'm just not going to reveal because our studio is different from everybody else's. So I'm not going to say that other special thing that we have at the other end of the hallway. I'm not even going to bring that up. But he goes down there. I'm not going to say anything, though, Aaron. I'm not going to say nothing.
I know. Well, it is so good to have everybody back in the house tonight. Oh, all we can do is exhale, guys.
I need a nap. I was going to say that again. I'm still sleepy. And I wore out from last night's show. It was an exciting show. It was a high-powered show. It was crazy. One of Ryan Royalty's most, you know, listened to. It was crazy, so... If you missed last night's show, definitely head over to our archives and click Pins, Rocks, Scissors, Eagles, and you'll see what all the chatter is about. What's going on, Bebo?
I'm chilling. I'm just letting people know we are live on the air.
Did you get a nap or anything today? Like, no? Just wrote? Just
nah,
wrote
I
off?
Did my, yeah, regular routine. Got up, wrote. You know, listen to music, wrote some more. I got this last corner of the map that I'm going to use to take over the world. That plan is still in effect, so. everything is rolling according to plan right now.
That's good. Nene's going to have everybody wanting to take a nap, but she say nap one more time.
Yeah, I'm going to stop doing that. Yeah, I apologize. I'm supposed to show up all vibrant and stuff. Me and Leisha had cooked up an elaborate scheme to call in sick, but we was like, we can't do that. So, you know what I'm saying? It just was, both of us is just wore out. I was like, Leisha, can they see us on Facebook? Can they really see us? Do you think they can see us?
It was my son's idea. So Lonja just telling me y'all sick.
That ain't right.
Let me find out, Junior. Don't let me have to come over there and take care of Jonathan.
Yeah, he's working in coercion with us. He's like, man, You and Miss Nene just say y'all caught a cold while y'all was out trapping.
I'm trying to tell y'all how to do it. Y'all ain't listening to me playing the video game. I told you what to do. Well, we know Risha doesn't sleep. That girl is always working.
Yes.
But the fruits of her labors is just outstanding. You
it
doing
is.
Your thing
it
over
is.
There, girl.
Yeah, Risha don't play.
Thank you.
Not play. Thank the Lord. We got a good right hand. So, other than that, we have some exciting guests tonight. Risha, please give our listening audience a little, just a tad about the guests, and we're going to let Tony go into live action. Just a tad.
Absolutely. We have the ultimate true crime author tonight, Miss Kathy Scott. She's a veteran author, award-winning investigative journalist. She's a public speaker, Los Angeles Times best-selling author. Her books have been reprinted in the UK and Poland, so she's like international. She's taken her work to Somalia, Saudi Arabia, Panama, all over the U.S. She's been a teacher. She taught journalism at the University of Nevada for 5 years until she traveled to the Gulf region with a magazine after the Hurricane Katrina aftermath, and she stayed there for 4 months. She's written 10 books. I mean, this is like the ultimate author. So I'm super excited that, you know, she came back. She was here previously because she co-wrote The Real Rick Ross's Freeway with Ross, his book with him, and she came back in the clubhouse so she can talk about her works and her projects with us this evening. So super excited for that.
Yes, it's going to be great. Last time she was here, her time was so limited, so I'm really interested in picking her brain about the projects that she has worked on and bringing our listeners up to speed, anything new, and, you know, the real dynamic behind all of the work that she does, because she's like an activist. She also fights, you know, she fights for, you know, the causes and stuff that she believes in. So we want to definitely have an opportunity to highlight all of those great things and, you know, avail ourselves of all her wisdom in the industry. So we definitely can't wait to get her on here. But Miss Tony, go ahead on and pay the bills so we can get this thing rolling.
I will indeed. Well, welcome everybody to our regular scheduled Wednesday night edition of Writing Raunchy Radio. We are so happy that you're joining us once again this evening. My name is Tony, and I am one of your fabulous co-hosts here on Writing Royalty Blog Talk. Writing Royalty Radio is dedicated to joining authors and readers together, creating a community of reading and writing greatness. Now, Miss Nap Lady Nene Capri, you know, she's tired because she has all these bangers that she's getting out to us. And just to give you guys a few, she has the Dream Weaver, her latest drop, and that's just a 5-star. And like I said before, she just had me fooled with the dream, the lead character. I thought I had it all figured out. But lo and behold, I was wrong. But you got to get that into your library. That's one of her latest classics. She also has the P-Trap series that she is presently working on, part 4. So get part 1, 2, and 3 to get caught up. You know, get Coco and Kason into your life, and your life will not be the same. Now, she has the Trust No Beast series that she shares with the one and only Cash Street Lit author, and they're actually penning a prequel to that called Eyes. So keep your cyber eyes peeled for all those latest hits from Miss Capri. Now, under that powerhouse G Street Chronicles, she also has Tainted, Live Fear and Death, and she's actually penning part 2. So that's why Miss Capri needs a nap these days.
Yes. Tell them I'm mouthing.
Now, Mr. Bebo, don't sleep on him. He has a last gone, Bebo. I finished it this afternoon. And let me just say, that ending took me by surprise. You and Nene got me over here thinking, you know, I got it one way, but it actually turns out to be something totally different.
Yep.
Yeah.
But the last dawn, that was good. That was good, D.
Thank you very much.
I got to get over to Amazon and leave my review. Now, in addition to the last dawn, he has the Rat Hunters, which is actually my first introduction to Debo. He has change for $1, and I'm not sure if that's still 99 cents. You can head over to Amazon and check it out, but you may want to get that into your library until my casket drops. Now, under G Street, who's doing things just, I can't keep up with G Street and George, but he has I Used to Love Her. He's actually penning part two. So we have some very busy authors on this show. So keep your eyes open to all those.
They got to go get that I Used to Love Her, because I'm a few thousand words out on part two. It's going to be coming real soon.
Well, I might have to do a reread. You know, I like to bring myself back up to date because I see so much in between.
And everything's going to be there, too. Everything's going to be there. And you already seen the new characters and all that. You're going to love what I did with them.
Yeah, people have a little snippet on Facebook, so you may want to head over to his page and check it out just to refresh and get to know the new characters. Now, these are just a few of the hot titles by my two awesome co-hosts that I very highly recommend. To keep on top of everything hot, new, and upcoming, please log on to writingroyaltyradio.blogspot.com. And actually, I must be getting into voice shape because I'm not as out of breath tonight, guys. But I'm going to kick it over to my wonderful co-host, Miss Leisha. Absolutely, absolutely. I also want to throw out there writingroyaltyradio.com, which is the website for the show. Hit it up. Hit up our guest book. Let us know that, you know, you listened in. Give the show a shout out. We have a testimonial page. We, you know, we have our shows. You can listen to archives. So it is a great page where you can just hang out on. So super excited for that. I want to say, though, you know, let me see. I want to say 2011 in November, NeNe wrote The Pussy Trap and it dropped. And I think I've been reading NeNe since 2011. I got married in October, so it's been almost 3 years, and her pen has not disappointed me yet. She's been with G Street since January 16th of this year and already got two bangers under her belt with another one on the way. So if y'all have not picked up that NeNe Capri Heat, make sure y'all get out there and grab that, because she's about to throw out these tunes. Oh, my goodness, she got so much going on with this trap and this tainted, too. She about to just make us all die. She trying to take us out, y'all. She trying to take us out.
Now. So you're going to need both. They're going to need tainted, too, and they're definitely going to need it to help them with trap four and vice versa. So definitely when both of those drop, you're going to need to run to both of them to see how everything's tied in, because I carefully am weaving just a little bit in between so you can catch that little element that you're missing from that track and a little element that you're missing from that tainted. So be ready for both of them. You're going to need them. And if you haven't already read Tainted 1, cop that, because it's a little bit of twist in there from P-Trap that takes you right into the P-Trap Part 4. So you're going to need that for something.
Just saying. That's true. I want to pick that up. And I started Bebo's book last night. I had a little headache, so I didn't finish it, but I started it last night. I'm going to finish it up today, and I'm enjoying it so far. And Aaron always, he always gets on me because he says I don't like his books. And this is true. It's a few books I don't like. But this book and Buses of Love, I'm all in. I like them. He always tries to say, you like, nothing all right.
You know what?
This last time, this Buses of Love, I'm telling y'all.
You should have had
Nita.
You should have had that green room, then you would have been reading it all along. Go ahead, Aaron.
This year, for the rest of the year, is just raw 16th. I'm telling you, no cut. Like, it's going to be all raw. Everything is going to be just a well-put-together story, plot, character development, real simple. As long as you're reading, you can read, like, everything going to fall right in place. This year, high 16s, no cut, not playing. Like, I'm raising the bar. Like, you have to really be putting out some real serious reading material. if you want to be trying to get the reader's attention, like any real readers, because they're going to be really seeing the fake stuff, and they're going to see, like, yo, nah, this is fake. Somebody hurried up and tried to put this together and get my money, and then they're going to be reading the real stuff that I'm going to have out. So please be standing next to me with something real.
I will be. I'll be standing over there, I promise, I hope. I'm going to do the best I can because, you know, some days I'm hot, some days I'm not. I hear. I don't know. Nobody, Alicia, put it back. Put the 45 down. I'm just having a Maya royalty joke. Alicia done got up, put a coat on. Oh, God. Alicia, we got a very important guest coming tonight. You need to be here. Take your coat off and sit back down. Nothing has happened. I can't even tell a joke around here no more. Forget it. Go ahead, Alicia. Just go. Somebody else take over the show. Put your hat back. Put your fedora back on and fix your mic, and let's go. Tony, watch the door.
All I asked was a question. But if my coat was on, trust and believe, Tony coat on, too.
I can't tell none of y'all to watch the door. Aaron's going to be right behind, in front of you. Not even behind you. He's going to be right in front of y'all. Beating the car up. Y'all better hurry up.
That's right. Let's go. I'm about to drive off. Y'all better get in.
Alicia be on the hood. Only be on the bumper.
Nah, but real trip, yo, y'all gotta go over there and grab that Dreamweaver and that Last Don. Like, this is definitely one of those times where you don't want to judge a book by its cover. Like, it's some great stories.
Yeah.
Like, and
absolutely.
You know, we more than anything, like, we intent on bringing the readers good material and trying to, you know, elevate ourselves. And raise the bar for our peers in a good way. You know what I mean? Not negative. So everybody is doing good. So if people want to do good, like I remember when I first really started really, really getting interested in writing and wanting to write and be good at it, like I was like, yo, I know I got to do this. I got to be like this. It has to be like this. Like, I was serious. I was studying. I was intent on trying to, you know, be perfect as I could with the knowledge I had. Like, I was really intent on it, and we just really want to bring that back to the forefront of the industry. And, you know, the only way to do that is by having the material out there, and we want the readers to support us because we're not going to rush y'all. We're not going to, you know, like, give y'all no rush work. When you crack it, open a book, it's going to be a reading experience.
Uh-huh. That's true. And, Phoebe, I just want to echo that because, you know, I read some of your earlier works just to get myself familiar with your work when you were doing the contest with Cash. And I could see from my first book of yours that I read, The Rat Hunters, to this last one, The Last Dawn, I could see the growth. You know, I love the direction that you take your characters, and I just love the character development because that is so key. You know, it just makes you become a part of the story. And like Alicia said, I've been an indie fan since 2011, P-Trap 1. So I know what her fan spits. So I have been familiar with her. And now I've become familiar with your work, and I do see what you just spoke of, you know, the growth and expanding your mind and then putting it down on your pages. So that is just so true. And I'm going to get off my soapbox and sit back and
sit. No. Give her another bar of Dove. Nah.
It's true though, and that's what makes a good author though. Is growth. You can't stay in one. That makes a good person in general because you can't stay in one place and then expect to go two blocks away and you still, you know, on the stoop. You have to put in work. And that's one thing Aaron does. He is a hard worker. He puts in work, and that growth in his pen shows that he puts in work on a regular basis.
Thank you very much. Like, seriously, I really, really sincerely appreciate that. Seriously, because I just want growth. You know what I mean? I just want to be known as a good writer more than anything. Even people talking about money. Like, I don't want to be the richest writer. I'd rather just be left known, you know, known as being an exceptional writer by the writing community. I'm great with that. So I'm definitely going to continue to grow. I got a lot more growing and doing And, you know, I just want, you know, people to walk alongside me so y'all can see my growth and see that I'm not playing. I'm not trying to get over on nobody. And I'm intent on putting out good literature. And we all are, like over at G Street and any of my other fellow authors I be dealing with, like, we be focused on trying to bring better literature, even in the midst of other little things. Like, we really focus on literature. That's why the passion comes out like that sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. And plus, like you were saying, it's good to have, like even though Alicia is saying, he thinks I don't like his books, but the thing is that you got honest people in your camp and honest enough to say, you know, we need to work on this or we need to do that. I send Alicia stuff. She'd be like, I don't feel in any heat. You know what I'm saying? Like, she will tell me. Like, she's not going to say, oh, my God, that was the greatest thing ever just because I'm Nene. She'd be like, no, that ain't it. Like, I don't feel it. I'm like, okay. I know I got to go back in there. I might have to flush something out. Some stuff. She'd be like, oh, yeah, that was it. So, you know, we don't have, you know, yes men in our corners. So that's the blessing about our team. Like, we are good enough to be honest with each other and be like, look, you messing up or that ain't right. That don't sound right. That don't look right. And it might, you know, we might get off into a little bit back and forth until we figure it out, but we know that it's for the growth and betterment of the team. So I'm happy that we have that dynamic so that we can learn and grow. If not, then you will stay in the same place. You know what I'm saying? You'll be stagnant because you got people around you saying, yeah, you good, and you think you good, and you think you wrote the best tale ever, and because they're your friend, they not saying nothing. So be honest to an author when they come to you and, you know, about a craft because it's important. You don't want them to put out something that's less than par, so... That's my speech. I gave Tony back her soapbox. Put it under the table. Here we go. We got Kathy Smith on here tonight. We got Kathy Scott on here tonight. We're going to be getting things going. And Alicia, go ahead on and introduce her and bring her on in. I believe she's mic'd up. She's sitting in her chair, and we're going to get ready to bring her in here and talk about all of her accomplishments.
Yes, indeed.
We did, Nene.
Huh?
I missed how we did.
Did we bring her in?
We'll bring her in.
We can bring her in.
Bring her in.
It's just
a minute.
Hey, Kathy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Sounds like you're having a good show. Thank you. Good evening.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you for coming out.
My pleasure.
Yes, welcome to our special Wednesday night edition of Writing Royalty Radio. You have Mr. Aaron Bebo, the fabulous Miss Leisha and Miss Tony, and I am Nene Capri, and we are honored to have you in the clubhouse and be able to discuss your contributions to literature and to the arts as a whole. Could you please give our listening audience your beginnings, how all this started for you?
I'm a journalist by trade, so I broke into journalism I switched careers. I was actually a secretary for a utility company, and I went and got my degree, and then I faked my way into the news business and got hired by a small newspaper, and then worked my way up and worked for a daily newspaper. I was also writing for the New York Times freelancing, but I was at the Las Vegas Sun full time when Tupac Shakur was shot, unfortunately, and he was shot on my watch. It was my beat, and so I covered it, and that became my first book, The Killing of Tupac Shakur, and I'm just finishing my 11th book now.
What was that like? You know, our era of, this is like our era of music, the host here on the show, and that really impacted us a lot. Being right there on the scene firsthand, collecting that information, you know, about Tupac, what was that like for you, gathering that information? What type of space did that put you in?
Well, it was, I was familiar with his work. I watched a lot of MTV, so I, you know, my favorite song of his was Dear Mama, still is, but I couldn't pronounce his name. And I found myself at the scene of the crime, a homicide cop called and woke me up, and I went. He was already at the hospital, but the, you know, police were still there, and then I just covered it from that day on. But it was crazy. I mean, I was at the hospital almost every day, and I was there when he died, And and Suge Knight came in. He was right there, and all the outlaws and everybody. Reverend Jackson went in to see him, and all, you know, I think Hammer came in. They all, you know, all kinds of people went in, and they just sort of, you know, his mom only allowed, you know, Tupac's mom was very picky about who could go in there. But it was sad. It was somber. It was, for seven days, he was in a coma, and it was, it was a sad situation. I was getting regular updates from the hospital, and, you know, if you have a bad chest injury and you make it through the first day, then you get to the third day, and you make it to the sixth day, you're pretty much home free. But he didn't make it. But it was interesting gathering it. There were a lot of reporters, magazine type reporters, and music type reporters contacting me trying to get information, because the cops wanted to talk to anybody outside of Vegas. I got Rolling Stone and Kevin Powell. You guys know Kevin?
Yeah.
Kevin's a good guy, and he was writing for Rolling Stone, and he called me, and I didn't know him, other than later I recognized him from the real world, because he's in that first one. But Kevin couldn't get in, and I drove him to Homicide, and Homicide Sergeant came out, and he got the exclusive interview for a national paper. Nobody else could get it with Homicide. So I did that for him. But one book leads to another, and then, you know, 6 months later, Biggie Smalls was killed, and so I jumped on that and covered that. Went to Parker Center downtown, and, you know, went into Compton and all of that. I mean, I interviewed a ton of people. It's just a whole different, I'm fascinated by it. You know, I think it's I like the type of music, and those guys were pioneers. So, I'm happy to be their biographers, if I can call myself that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful. Go ahead, Aaron.
How close were you to the hip-hop community before all of this happened, the tragedies?
Absolutely nothing. Nothing. Not close at all. But, you know, I mean, I'm a journalist. I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to fake it and pretend, you know, and try to say, oh, yeah, you know.
Was it kind of like an assignment that turned you on to it?
Well, we have beats. You know, mine is, I covered the, sorry, there's traffic nearby. I covered the police beat at the time. I covered crime. I was the main reporter on crime at the Las Vegas Sun, so the story was mine. And there was an entertainment, you know, a couple of entertainment writers at the paper who did some side stories, and, you know, there was quite a bit of that going on. But, you know, when, as you guys know, you write books, you research. It's all about research. So as you delve in, you kind of become an expert, you know, without doing it intentionally, you become an expert. And then, you know, with Biggie, I went to New York, and, you know, I'm the kind who I don't like to call in advance. I went to a corner market, and it happened that I was stopped in to buy something. It turned out in Bed-Stuy, it turned out that the owner of the store had hired Biggie when he was 12 years old as a box boy, and his son grew up with him, and his son was there working at the store when I went in. And they gave me Valletta Wallace's telephone number, Biggie Small's mother, and I called her, and she invited me to her Teaneck, New Jersey home, and I interviewed her. So so she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. She and Fannie Shakur, Tupac's mom, are quite different. But they both lost their sons to ridiculous violence. And, you know, the biggest thing, and I'll keep covering these guys, I'm working on a second edition for Biggie right now, and that, I'll keep covering these. It's pitiful that these cases haven't been solved. And so I'll just keep covering them until the cows come home. you know,
yeah.
because they're, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing, it's, I mean, solve them and I'll stop writing about it.
Right.
You know, people go, you're cashing in. You know, well, we write for a living. I mean, I write for a living. It's what I do for a living. But it's you know, I'm happy to embarrass the Las Vegas Police Department any chance I get on the Tupac case. And they don't want to solve it. They solved it. They don't want to bring it to court, you know. And die. Of course, two of the people who were responsible, and you know, the shooter, Orlando Anderson, because I clearly believe he's the one who did it. All evidence points to it, and you know, he's gone. But you can still solve a crime with someone who's dead. You can officially announce, based upon all the things you've gathered, that this is it, and you know, end of story.
Yeah. Right.
I'll go away.
Yeah, at least so the families can have some peace. You know.
Yeah, I mean, they all, yeah, especially that. I think Valletta, the status thing, she, you know, she did that wrongful death suit, and, you know, she was getting a lot fed into her, you know, and with these cases, I'm fascinated by evidence and all the facts, and, you know, you have to take the hyperbole out and all the emotional things and just, you know, not let your emotions get the best of you and just look at it and all the ridiculous, you know, theories and everything and just boil it down to what actually happened in the Tupac case. Very simple. You've got motive. You've got opportunity. Biggie Smalls is a little bit different, and I don't think it was because the police department was negligent there. They just had a lot going on. They had the Rampart scandal. They had they had a lot. Yeah, and then you've got, you know, cops hating each other and Russell Poole, and I hate to even say his name, and all these other. And you've got, you know, Reggie Wright with you know, his dad used to work for the police department. He ran security for death row. But he's a good guy, by the way, Reggie is. But they and I've talked to them all. I went to Quad Studios in New York and talked to the police there about the Tupac shooting in, you know, 94, and I went to Manhattan Police and talked to them about that Quad Studios shooting where they just let it go, and, you know, the first attempt at his life. But I mean, it's fascinating when you lay it all out. But I think some things are just more simple than they appear.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I've been covering this from day one, and I'm not going to stop covering him, you know.
Yeah. Go ahead, Aaron.
Did you, being a crime writer, I'm sure, where were you writing out of at the time when this took place, like the Tupac Shakur thing? Were you already
in Las Vegas?
Okay.
Son. Yeah, I was on, I got a call from Homicide. I went to the scene.
Okay, so were you, at that time, were you like, in your mind, was it like, did you, because you weren't dealing with the hip-hop community, so did you just look at it like, rapper, African American guy, another one of these crazy things that happened.
No, my mind doesn't work that way. No, I mean, I've covered the African American community here like crazy. You know, I've covered housing issues, and I've been to the west side of Las Vegas. I've been on KCEP, the radio station here, and there was a black politician, you know, who I used to cover him at City Hall. They ran him out of office. But I've been to all the low-income housing projects. I you know, covered infractions that were going there and all the, you know, terrible living conditions. I covered all that. So because those issues are sort of sidelines to, if you're a crime writer, those things, you know, it's sort of health and welfare and safety and stuff. Those all go hand in hand with that beat. So it's not, I don't think like that. I don't, that's not how my mind works when a crime happens. And I don't think, there was a black African American limo driver who was murdered by his girlfriend, and she wasn't the most upstanding person. He was black. She was black. And Stevie Wonder would use him when he came into town, and I went to the funeral, and they and the family invited me, and a photographer and I were the only media allowed in, and Stevie Wonder sang a cappella at his funeral. Teeny tiny Southern Baptist church on the west side of Las Vegas. So
wow.
I'm used to covering issues like that. So that doesn't even come into it. I mean, that's what people were saying on TV and stuff. But my thing, I just chased the story. I just chased the story.
I wasn't
caught up in all that.
I wasn't judging you off of none of the TV stuff or no type of. I just wanted to know what your thoughts were, because you said you weren't dealing with that community already.
No, I dealt with that community a lot. I didn't deal with hip hop.
Yeah, that's
with,
what I mean.
Yeah.
Like when you heard
but
it was a rap.
I think, yeah, I mean, I think the cops might be kind of thinking that way.
Yeah, I definitely
you know,
think that
they
they're
call
always
them twofers. You know, two for one. They shoot each other, you know, and cops call those twofers. But, I think they might have been. But, my thing was I just wanted to get to the bottom of it. I went to the news conference. It was crazy. You know, all the media was in town for the Mike Tyson fight. You know, so we don't have paparazzi here. Nobody sits at the airports taking people's pictures. They won't let you have a camera at the airport, you know, for that purpose. So people come in here anonymously. You know, and they like it because of that, and so it was odd for the cops to have 50 people at a news conference. They're not used to it, so they were like deer in the headlights practically. You know, and they just thought this was going to go away. That's what I think. They thought, okay, we won't do anything. We'll just give it a little thing, and then hopefully it'll go away. Little did they know.
Yeah,
this man
you know
was like
what?
The next
another,
Malcolm X.
Another rapper had got killed out there too, Mac Dre.
Yeah, kind of ticked me off a little that they said, this sort of thing doesn't happen in our town, and we're going to solve it. And really, 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 you're not going to let them come in and do it? Then why the heck don't you continue doing that one? You know. That's the first thing that came to my mind.
Definitely. And that's a lot, you know. And I want to ask you, with you being there with such high-profile cases like Tupac's murder, like Biggie's murder, those are things that were very big. And now being a journalist and seeing what's going on right now in America with the murder of young children and, women, men. I mean, it's getting crazy with that. How do you feel like about that with the tension and stuff as a journalist? How are you feeling?
Well, I think that there have always been a lot of murders, I think because of social media and the advent of the internet. I think we see more, but we're not doing something right. You know, the cops and stuff. I mean, look at New York City. We've got, you've got the Michael Brown thing going on. You've got that poor man, what was his name, in New York City. He was just standing outside a restaurant. I mean, I watched the video on that. How pitiful is that? I mean, something's wrong. And it appears to be systemic, and it appears to be profiling. So I don't know. I think it's a sad commentary, but I don't know the answer. I just think it's out of control, and in some respects, in others it's not. So, but I do. Don't you think that with social media that we see more than we used to?
Definitely,
absolutely.
Yeah. Open
up
what
it is, but it's good because it puts a little sunshine on everything, doesn't it?
Sometimes, but then you got the copycats, sometimes like back in the day when they used to be like keep some things under wraps when you had those serial killers and stuff because they didn't want it to get everywhere, so somebody didn't mark patterns. And I think that in people trying to help folks be aware of what's going on,
it kind of sets that into place. Like, it becomes a pattern because it's like that again, again, and again. You know, it's like, it's not like it's an isolated incident, you know what I'm saying, where you would have something that happened and then you might not hear nothing like that for about 6 months, a year maybe. You know what I'm saying? Like, it, in our years, we could look back and say, remember the such and such in 1970, such and such? And, you know, like, it's certain times. But now it's like you can't keep up with everything that's happening because it's so rampant. And I think social media gives people that moment of fame that they really want, you know, because they see television and people are famous, and it gives them that moment of fame. And I think it makes people set a pattern into place. I don't know how much of a copycat.
I mean, there have always been serial killers. I mean, they were in the 1800s. There were serial killers in America. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, a sociopath is a sociopath. You know, and I don't know how much of that is true. I do think that, you know, the gentleman, and my apologies for not remembering his name, who was in New York City and stopped again, for the umpteenth time. What was his name?
I think Eric Garner. Yeah.
And all he wanted was to be left alone, and thank goodness for smartphones. Because otherwise those police reports would have been whitewashed and we would not have gotten, I mean, I would have loved to see the police reports on those because
right.
they didn't know they were being filmed because they would have grabbed that thing. And
absolutely.
Thank God, you know, thank goodness that we have those.
I'm sorry, Alicia.
No, that was Tony. Go ahead, Tony. Kathy, welcome once again to the show. But I want to piggyback on what Nene was saying about the social media, how people just do that copycat thing. Because here in New York, we've had 3 flag incidents on 3 of our bridges. You know, and that's really scary that an individual can actually get up on the bridges here in New York and change a flag. You know, that's like a breach of security.
No kidding.
So the social media is, and they get up there and they try to take selfies, and you wonder where the people that are protecting us are. How can they actually get past that security? So the social media is like highlighting these who can be the most risque, and that's not necessarily a good thing. You know.
Well, I have a friend whose sister. Her sister was depressed and that sort of thing for a while, and Robin Williams killed himself and hanged himself, and that was quite out there in the media. Everybody forgave him. Nobody criticized him for what he did, you know, what he did to his family, his friends, and everything, you know. Very selfish thing to take themselves out like that. And it just generally as a whole, not him necessarily, because I don't know the whole story behind him, but her sister, and women don't typically hang themselves, but her sister, who'd been struggling for years and years and years, she was like 54 years old, she hanged herself a few days after, you know, a week or something after Robin Williams did, and she said she can't help but think that because it was okay and it was all over the media that it was okay with what he did and everybody accepted it, but she went out that way too. It's the first thing that ended them on. Very sad. And that, in a sense, is a copycat because of the internet and social media, we're inundated with everything about him, you know, and the way it went, you know, all the details we got in real time. You know, you don't have to wait a day to read a newspaper anymore.
Yeah, see, that's why I think it's a problem with social media, because it be seeming real time, but the sources don't see the difference with now and back in the days. The sources were viable. Like, you knew where to really go. Like the guy who just got killed in the car, the actor that was in the Fast and Furious. Yeah, they had killed that guy like 4 different times online with the same exact thing that actually happened to him. Like,
wow.
without the
Mercedes-Benz? What was that?
They changed the story
multiple times.
Yeah, the guy who was in Fast and Furious.
Christopher Walker, what was his name? They had killed this guy online a million times before it even happened. Like, they be killing people online, all these pranks. And then another thing I think is bad about social media, too, is that the generation directly below us and the ones below them really don't have the, they haven't been pushed to the limits to strive for the intellect that we were pushed towards at our ages coming up. And they have things easy, and they really don't have the knowledge required because everything is quick. They think they go to Google and get the answer, but they're just another future know-it-all with no answers because they can't explain it. They have no
explanation.
I think there are good
sites out there, and I think that, you know, there's I mean, I can go and find newspaper or periodicals, you know, very, very quickly. And whereas before I'd have to go to a library or an archive or something to do it. And so I think in that sense, it's, you know, for real research, you can actually do it. I mean, I still have to sometimes go in. You can find books where you can get pieces of books and, you know, whatever it is you want to quote from, you can actually find it. But in that sense, it's good. But I do think that it's evolving, don't you? That I think it will turn into a more valuable tool. I mean, look at Amazon and what it's opened up for authors. You no longer have to be tied to the traditional publishers and write these enormous book proposals on the hopes that you might get one, and then they make all the money. I'm with both, you know, I'm with traditional publishing houses, but I've also gone to indie. I call it indie publishing, by the way. I don't call it self-publishing. All the authors I know are delving into it, and it's just indie, just like records. And so in that way, a whole new world has opened up for authors, you know, because we have options. We're not tied to, you know, traditional. I mean, the world is at our fingertips, and we've got so many more opportunities now than we did before. So in that sense, it's all, you know, it's all media, really, social media. It's really all multimedia on the internet, and it's changing the way we do things in good ways and, as you point out, bad ways.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely feel like it's the gift and the curse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is. Because if we go all the way back, even if you go back to Watergate, shout out to Woodward and Bernstein, but if we would have had social media, I think Nixon would have resigned a lot sooner, and it would have been a little bit more quiet, but it would have been more information out than, you know, because they did a lot of footwork and they had a lot of roadblocks. But I think if social media was, you know, up and running then, it would have been a little easier for them. We would have gotten more information. We probably would have came apart.
Yeah, and I think too, and you know, but in some respects, my gosh, thank God for social media, because Palin was a heartbeat away from becoming president. So had it not been for social media, there would have been a lot about her that we wanted to have learned about. So I think in that respect, it's, you know, for politicians, they've got to watch their P's and Q's, you know, because boy, oh boy, it's all there. Who was the waiter who took videotape of, it was a candidate for office. Said some awful thing, and it was either about women or race, something, and this waiter videotaped it. So that took care of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in those respects, you can call it citizen journalism. It's not really citizen journalism, of course, because journalism, is its own thing. But it certainly puts us in powerful positions, you know, to right wrongs. I think that, you know, if things weren't videotaped, then, you know, with these smartphones, then there'd be it saves a lot of court time sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's hard to argue with it when you can see it on, you know, and it stamps it. You've got the time, the date, the everything on it. So in that respect, I think it's given us a lot of freedom, don't you think?
I mean, I do, but I think honestly, like even going back to the author thing, like I'm looking at the future of it, because right now it's just really unorganized for a lot of authors because they just don't know how to effectively use it because it's new. But beforehand, like even watching it before from another perspective, like I think it's going to end up doing what it did to music, like. The music business now, they used to have artist development. So you would get an artist when it actually came time to present the product. Now, everything is being decided on trend, and a lot of amateurs and a lot of people who really aren't really cut to really do, like, when you do something, when you get put in a place like your author, so, like, that's a unique characteristic. Now it's a lot of people who slipping through that don't really possess that.
Yeah, well, they're not really authors. I mean, they're getting this, yeah, and they're getting this stuff out there, but they're not really authors. But, you know, the reader knows. Reader knows junk. Don't you guys pick up something and go, whoa, you know, that's not a book. That's just somebody who put a cover on it and put it on.
Surprised.
So I think that's, I mean, I just got an award for Murder in Beverly Hills. I'm very, very proud of that, and it's an indie award. And it came out traditional publishing, and I came out with the second edition, and I put it out there myself, and I independently released it, and Forward Reviews gave it a silver second place in Best True Crimes of 2013, Best True Crime Book. So in that respect, yeah, and so these places are our judges. So you know, Cream does, I didn't get first, so I'm not calling myself that, but Cream does rise to the top. So I think when I think all those are weeded out, and it is still relatively new. And, you know, people of the big traditional publishing houses hate Amazon, but, you know, they're doing it bigger and better than anybody else. They're the biggest booksellers in the world. And they're, you know, light years ahead of everybody else. So good for them. They're the ones who gave us this incredible platform. You know, Create Books, which Create Books was really crummy when they first came out, and now they're not anymore. And you can lay out the book yourself, or you can hire somebody to do it for you if you don't want them to do it. You can make a beautiful, beautiful book, and then go hire an editor. Don't put it out without an editor. But, and with social media, there is so much. I mean, I consult about it, and there's so much you can do to put a book out there. The sky is the limit, and there's so many opportunities out there for us now that it's exciting that you can actually make a living off of it without having to go through traditional publishing. In traditional publishing, you know, the authors are the last and the least to be paid, even if you're with a big five, which I am with St. Martin's Press, and you're still the last, you know. You still have to market because they're not putting the marketing dollars out there. They leave it all up to the author. You guys, your show is a wonderful platform for authors, you know, to help spread the word about our book. So thank you guys for being where you are.
Yes, thank you. We appreciate you. Like, we appreciate, you know, because you open our eyes to things, too, as the interview is going on. Like,
well, thank you. Yeah, I look at it very optimistically, and I'm a bit of an optimist, but I look at it as, you know, we've got opportunities that, you know, 10 years ago we didn't have as authors, and we've got choices. We're not stuck with, I still love to go to traditional publishing for some of my books, but certainly not all of them, and I'm, you know, I'm happy to hook up with a couple of, you know, high-profile authors in true crime, and we put things out together. And, I mean, Greg Olson, who's a top true crime author, and he's a friend, he put out two indie books himself on social media under his True Crime Rant or Notorious USA publishing name, and he twice hit the New York Times bestseller list under ebooks. They now have an ebook category. He made the New York Times, and he did it himself. Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's amazing. Like,
absolutely.
I definitely
can give you some tips if you guys. Yeah, you guys email me. I'll give you some tips. But
I want to ask you, where do you go on social media to be a presence for your type of fiction?
I'm nonfiction. Yeah, I'm nonfiction. I'm everywhere. If it's social media, I'm there. Reddit, Dig, Tumblr, StumbleUpon, Pinterest, what's the other one, Pinterest, Goodreads. I don't take advantage of Goodreads the way I should. Get yourself an about.me page. You know, if you're an author, get an about.me. It's a landing page. You can put everything there on half a page, you know, links and what else. And it's the first thing that aggregates really high on the Internet. I'm everywhere. And when I go and I put Google Plus, I didn't even know you could track numbers. So I was looking at Google Plus the other day and posting something there, and I looked under my name, and I've had more than 2 million hits on that. And I'm like, oh, my God. People laugh at me for using Google Plus. I'm like, whoa. So anytime, like I post for, I'm a blogger for Psychology Today. I blog about forensics and evidence. I haven't had time lately to do it, but because I've been on deadline. But every time I post a blog, I put it on Pinterest, I put it on Facebook, I put it on Twitter. Some people stick to Twitter and Facebook. You've got to expand. Pinterest is big. And Google Plus and LinkedIn, always. LinkedIn is huge, and you're hitting a whole different market. You're business people, professional people, whole different, and it is huge. So you can't discount any of it. You just spread the word. You don't limit it. And then if you have pages on Facebook that's under your genre, like there are true crime, you know, groups, you share whatever it is. You share. Don't overdo it. Don't wear out your welcome, but you share it. If you've got something big going on, if you just hit a bestseller list on Amazon, share that and send it over to whatever genre it is, a group page on Facebook. You know, do all that stuff. I do it all.
That was some powerful.
It just keeps your name out there, keeps your story out there, keeps your books out there. It's just, you're just spreading the word.
Okay.
Fun too.
We got a caller? Okay. You ready to take a caller?
Uh-oh.
Okay.
You ready, Kathy?
I'm ready.
Okay. 682-554, good evening. You're live with the Writing Royalty crew and the crime writer, Miss Kathy Scott.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. How's everybody?
How are you doing?
Thank you. Good. I'm doing good. I can't complain. I'm a little sleepy.
Okay. Who are we speaking with?
My name is Nita. I'm from the Sisters of Essence Book Club.
All right.
How are you doing,
Sisters, Nita? All right.
Yes.
We got a good opportunity to learn about a great author this evening. You know, as you've probably been hearing, she's covered Tupac's story, she's covered Biggie's story, and she writes crime and fiction. Definitely, Miss Kathy Scott, please recommend her to the book club. They will get a treat in reading. She also co-wrote Freeway Rick Ross. So you have some excellent, excellent reads that can go that way at the book club.
Okay, we'll do. Hello, Miss Kathy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I can't complain. I've briefly been listening to, you know, what you've been talking about, what you guys have been talking about, and it's very interesting, and I'm very glad to join this group.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you so much.
Welcome.
They are a beautiful book club, so shout out to SOE in Texas. I'll be out there in October. And
all right.
Yes, they bring authors to readers, so definitely.
Again,
already
get them to read the Rick Ross autobiography.
Yes.
Definitely. I have got to share that with the president of the club, Miss Eva, is our president, and I would definitely run that by her. Again, as Mimi can put, you know, say, well, she'll be here in October, so we're definitely looking forward to that.
Thank you. I can't wait to see you all. Thank you so much for calling in and showing your support and all that you guys do for authors and readers. Thank you very, very much. We salute you.
Absolutely.
Yes,
thank you guys. Thank you guys. You guys have a good evening.
Thank you.
Yes,
you too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Very good.
I have a question for Kathy. Kathy, this is Tony. How did you – I've read the Rick Ross book, and I absolutely loved it. I think I told you that last time you were on. Can you just let our listeners know how you came to to be, how you came to partner up with him?
Oh, they came to me a couple of years ago. And I said this at our book launch. We had a wonderful book launch. There were more than 200 people there. And right on the edge of Compton, actually. But they read the Tupac, and, you know, he's got kind of a team of people behind him. And they read the Tupac and Biggie books, especially Biggie was what they liked. And they wanted me, they liked my voice. And they wanted me to write his book. And he'd written something, but it was more stream of consciousness, years of writing down things while he was in prison, thank goodness, because you read it, the detail is incredible, and you can't make that stuff up. It's fascinating. No one's ever written about, you know, behind the scenes and what really goes on. All you see is, you know, the cops making busts, and you get their details, but nobody's gone into, you know, behind the scenes in these drug houses and counting rooms and the way it was all done. It's fascinating. Little network out there. It was like a city, you know. So they wanted me to read a bunch of stuff, gave me some files to read of this court case. I love reading court documents, by the way. And they're just tidbits of information. And I was very familiar. I had met Gary Webb at a Society of Professional Journalists dinner years earlier. And it was right before his paper dumped him. And, you know, he's the one who broke that whole Iran-Contra thing. And then, of course, somebody got to the paper, and then they backed away from Gary, and he was just hung out to dry. You know, and then, of course, he killed himself with not one, but two shotgun blasts to the head. So you tell me how that's possible.
Yeah.
And B, it was ruled a suicide. So that used to happen here. There were a lot of suicides with two bullets to the head, and then there was never a gun there. So that used to happen in mob days. So I was familiar with the story. I'd read his pieces. So I was familiar with that whole thing. And how that went down. So the story was familiar, but then they put Rick on the phone with me, and then we got together at one point. But he's just a likable guy. He's nice, and he's real, and I loved his story. And so it was, and it's not a far-fetched from, you know, genre and all of that. So it felt very natural thing for me to write. So I mean, typically I write about murder, but that I've written about drugs, you know, my entire career. I've gone on drug busts. I've been behind the cops as they bust down doors. They won't let reporters do that anymore, but I got to do that in the late 80s and 90s. But so I've covered you know, in courts. I've been to, you know, lots of trials. I've covered lots of drug busts. So that wasn't new to me at all. You know, so he's just a great guy. I mean, I got to know him really well, and, you know, he's a great guy. We're friends. We talk, you know, every couple of days.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
and the book is doing really
book.
Well. He's on a national tour, and the book is doing really, really well.
I left my review, and just reading the book, it just made you feel that you came to know him on a personal level.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like in layman terms. He took you, like, on a daily tour with him.
And there were some things that weren't flattering to him, and he included, you know, those things were included. And I guess his family, not everybody's real happy with what he included. Some of his friends, I mean, he cleared everything ahead of time. You care, you mind if I put you in the book? They had no idea the details he was going to put in. And I told him, well, listen, the statute of limitations has expired on all of that, so they're safe. But
so, like, what is the wildest thing, you know, for some of our people who may not have read yet, so that they'll be able to pique a little interest? What is the wildest scene or story or, you know, research that you came across dealing with Rick Ross?
Oh, I think one of his homies was hiding in the closet under the laundry or something, under bags of money. But the biggest thing, I think, probably the hairiest and was unbelievable to me, that, you know, there was a Ricky Ross task force they couldn't get him, you know. It took him like 5 years to get him, even though they had, you know, all these different agencies on this task force, and they didn't know what he looked like because he never, ever let anybody take his picture. That's when he had dreadlocks. And they were chasing him, but they didn't know they had him for sure, but they were chasing him, and he, the cops were, and he got away, and he was driving, and he told his brother or his cousin, put your foot on the accelerator. And mm-hmm. he opened the driver's door, and then he tucked and rolled. You know, he's a short guy, and he's solid, and he tucked, and he didn't get hurt, and he rolled out of the moving car and ran. And mm-hmm. the sheriff's department, those deputies fired shots at him. They were whizzing past his head.
Wow.
Then they planted drugs on his in his car and money, and you know, they never carried money and drugs together. So what he did, and it goes further, I mean, that was so hairy. So what he did was the cops got up in his trial and lied. And uh-huh. he hired a private eye. He and his attorney hired a private eye. And the guy went undercover in the Rick Ross task force and caught those guys that they made up reports on him and everything else, and they caught him, and they actually prosecuted them for planting evidence and everything else. And while he was in prison, he put on a suit and went to court and testified against these guys. And they didn't get much time, you know, 3 and 4 years, but they still, it was one of his favorite days. You know, because
wow.
if you're going to try to get somebody, get them the right way. Don't cheat. Here, you're trying to get him for cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And then
right.
look what they're doing. They couldn't even right. get him the right way, so they tried to fake it, and he got them in the end. And I don't, not that, I mean, I like cops. I think, but these guys weren't on the up and up. It's, you know, so he hired a private eye and got them.
Right.
And that's all. It's all laid out. I mean, you can't make it up. And this stuff, they had holes cut through the walls for escape. You know, if they'd evade the police all the time, because they just hightail it out a hole in the wall that took them out to the alley. You know, so they,
wow.
they couldn't get them. They couldn't get them. So it was really, and the only way they got him was a year after he quit selling drugs, was on a, kept enticing him, you know, his source down in Nicaragua kept enticing him, and he was being paid by the DEA. They paid him a total of $160,000, this little narc, to get Rick Ross, and took him, they just enticed him, and he wasn't buying him for himself, it was for a friend who was still dealing, and that's the only way they could get him. They couldn't get him on a, you know, on real selling of drugs. It was a sting operation.
Mm.
So those things,
wow.
are the, yeah, and then mm-hmm. he's the guy who the cup is always half full, not half empty. So he gets into,
that's true.
The LA school system let him down because, you know, he was illiterate. So he gets into jail, goes to the law library and starts teaching himself how to read and write so he could fight his own case.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fascinating what he, it's a fascinating story. And just the day-to-day, you know, his homeboys and, you know, and his mom will get mad at him. They're selling drugs right under her nose, and but it was a real community thing. I mean, he was buying pews for the church.
Mm-hmm.
He said the minister knew where he was getting his money. They had no problem accepting the church pews. I'm going to criticize it, and I think it's comical.
Yeah, he said, we can't be standing up in here praising the Lord. Like, we're going to need these chairs, so he's had to take them, huh?
Yeah, hear no evil, see no evil.
Yes, let me ask you, with your writing, what would be the perfect career task for you, like the perfect story, like for them to call you on the phone middle of the night, besides what you've already accomplished, what would be the perfect story for you?
Well, I mean, the perfect story, they're all based on murders. So that's, you know, most of my books are. And I am eyeballing right now the Marine wife out of Southern California who was killed by the Marine who just retired. And, you know, they found her body down a, you know, 200-foot mine shaft or something in Joshua Tree. It's got all the elements of a true crime. It's a love triangle. You know, mm-hmm. she was pretty, her husband had a career, this other guy threw his whole career away, you know, and then the wife might be involved, and then the girl was pregnant. So you've got, you know, possibly with his baby, and, you know, little did he know, with pings on cell phones and whatnot, they were able to fascinating evidence, and San Bernardino police in Southern California, along with Riverside, did an incredible job. Because I don't know of very many police departments that would find that. Their area they had to search was something like 150 mines. They found her at the bottom of the mine. So it's amazing. And they had to use cameras where you drop it down the hole. And they worked nonstop. It only took them 5 days or something to find her. And, well, she'd been missing for a long time, but once they found some other clues, and plus, of course, they probably had everybody wired, but they knew where she was going to be, they knew where her car was found, and they knew that his alibi didn't hold up, and they figured, and all the pings for the cell phone led to wherever, however far they would go before they stopped pinging, and they just put that parameter and went after the evidence and solved it. It's real sleuth, real investigative police work. That stuff fascinates me, and I would love to be in the courtroom on that one, do a book about it. We'll
so
see how it pans out.
Everything that you write is nonfiction. So you don't do any fiction. You just cover cases.
I did do fiction. Trafficking of young girls to the brothels, the fake brothels, the massage parlors here in town that they're actually going on. They're fronts for illegal prostitution. They do a lot of trafficking of Asian women coming in. So I did I did a novel and it was God, I can't even remember the name of it. I've been on so many books I forget, but a four series that went in social media, the Social Media Monthly, and a series of four magazines, and it's about solving the crime. A reporter for the Las Vegas Post, which of course doesn't exist, and an investigative reporter helps solve it through Facebook.
Okay. Okay.
And then they go undercover and everything. You know, it's an interesting case. I had fun, but I don't know that I love poring over documents and the real deal and making it up. It's you've got to be, you know, accurate historically and you know, landmarks, and you've got to get streets right. Unless you make up cities, you've got to get things right. So there's a lot of research that goes into that too, but I feel safe with nonfiction, so I don't know that I'll do another fiction. But that'll be released in paperback eventually, probably, and then as an ebook too. You know, I'll probably, because it first was released in a magazine in four parts. Which, see, that too, that's always been done, but it's a social media magazine, Social Media Monthly, so it comes out in print and online.
So it's an interesting world, publishing. Okay.
Absolutely. I'm going to say, I don't know about y'all, but, honey, move over Jessica Fletcher. We got Jessica Fletcher and Nancy Grace all wrapped up in one. I'm like, okay, hold on. Now, you said she was where now? Have you ever thought about, outside of doing journalism, have you ever thought about going into law enforcement or being a lawyer? Was that ever something you wanted to do when you were younger?
No, I never did. I mean, I was told early on in my career that I should probably get a law degree. I mean, I know a lot about law and media law as well. I mean, I've got a great big media law book, but I kind of know it like the back of my hand. You have to, as a reporter, know about, you know, because you've got to be careful. Just because a cop says somebody killed somebody doesn't give you the right to print it. So you, because they'll use reporters to say certain things to get it in print, but that can slander someone. So you've got to be careful. You know, so I'm very careful what I put out there as far as books and print and blogging now instead of articles. Occasionally I write for magazines still, but So as far as that goes, I'm pretty good with the law, and then criminal law, of course, being in courts and reading documents and police reports. But yeah, I don't want to be on the other side of the fence. But I do find it fascinating. I mean, you sit back in a courtroom and it's just fun to watch who's talking to who, and you know, and you see everybody walking around and the families, and you know, just kind of talking to the bailiffs, and you get, oh boy, those guys can talk about stories because they're walking the inmates in and out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They'll tell you the conversation they had with them that morning. So you get some real juicy tidbits when you're in the courtroom and you're a reporter and you're just kind of hanging out. You're standing in the coffee line with prosecutors. So
mm-hmm.
I did that for the Ted Binion case, and that I sat through two trials on that, and walked into the courtroom thinking a murder had happened and walked out of the trial knowing that one had not. And they got off on the second trial, and that was Death in the Desert, my book Death in the Desert, which was just made into a movie. Michael Manson stars in it, and it's being shopped right now I believe it's being previewed to for possible showing at some film festivals before they shop at Death in the Desert. So that medium. That I've been approached to do a reality show. I was recently, a few months ago, approached to do a reality show. I don't have time to do a reality show.
Mm-hmm.
I like to watch them, you know, as far as criminal type things, and you know,
right.
A blogger. They were interested in a crime blogger, and it's
mm-hmm.
you know, I wouldn't have time to write.
Right.
You know,
right.
You don't just shoot one scene, you know, and then they have you make stuff up too. I think they kind of hurry things along.
It's definitely scripted. They have
yeah.
to keep it exciting, you know, for the audience, or they'll be sitting there like, okay, what am I supposed to do with this? Somebody has to at least argue or step on a toe or hit with an elbow or something. Like
yeah.
a drink has to get thrown. Like something has to happen dramatically. So,
yeah,
yeah definitely.
Sorry,
we have another caller, Alicia. Do you see him, Aaron or Alicia? Do you see
yes.
the caller? Okay.
864-450. Good evening. You're live with the Writing Royalty Crew. Who are we speaking with?
Hi, everyone. It's Ashley Nicole.
Hi, Ashley. How are you?
Hi, I'm okay.
We got Miss Kathy Scott on the line.
How you doing, Miss Kathy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm just tuning in, listening to the show. I want to show my support to everyone and say hello.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Yes, Miss Scott, this is one of our newest authors. She's on a company of an author that I write with. Her name is Ashley Nicole. She's just written her first book, so congratulations to you.
Oh, congrats. Very cool. Big accomplishment.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. We appreciate the love and continue to enjoy your new release.
All right. Yeah, I'm sitting there and listening. Let y'all bring somebody else in.
Thank you so much,
right,
Mama.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's Ashley Cole. She has bossed
it up
on Amazon. So definitely go over there and one click so that you'll be able to get that heat. Right back to live action. Aaron?
Do you read any crime fiction or crime nonfiction?
Well, I do. I'll read. I don't sit down and read a book all the way through when I'm on deadline. I've been on a deadline for months, from one book to the next. And I read bits and pieces. You know, I did read the Jodi Arias book. It was done by a friend of mine, Shanna Hogan, who did an incredible job on that. And I followed the case like crazy. But I started it on a plane. You know, I was in New York City, and I got it from my publisher. We share a publisher. So I started reading it that was probably the last book I've read all the way through. But I read bits and pieces. I read a lot of articles. I read the New York Times. I read Media Bistro for journalists. I'm fascinated by crime stories. I read politics, but you can't usually get my you got my politics out of me tonight. But usually I don't share. I don't share my politics on online typically. But I do enjoy I enjoy crime stories. I'm not big on novels. Years ago, I used to read a lot of novels, but I'm not big on novels. I love movies. I love anything to do with crime, anything to do with journalism, and I'm a reality. I mean, I love American
Have
Idol.
Have you been ID'd yet?
Say what? Oh, ID'd on Facebook.
Yeah, no, I'm an ID junkie.
Yeah, Rick Ross. Oh, ID. I've been on Investigation Discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
I've been on
there
a million times. Million. And I'm.
I'm going to look for you. I got to look for you
because
I'm waiting to get ID'd. You know, they slap your little
good
picture
you
up there.
Yeah, they
are. You know, they slap
your
picture like, you've been ID'd in between the break.
Yeah, they call me all the time. It's different producers usually, and sometimes they get a repeat. But for the most part, they're just different producers, and they look to see who's out there. But they see if you're writing about some. Blogging is a good thing if you want to get attention and you want somebody to notice you. You know, blog about it. Blogging is very important. LinkedIn, you can blog on LinkedIn right now and reach a huge audience. Yeah, email me and I'll tell you how to do it. But that you can. So it's important if you're writing about something, you put it out there. I mean, when I start writing about a case, I get the family coming out of the woodwork. I get all kinds of people they went to school with. I get all kinds of people. And uh-huh. If I didn't do that, then I would sometimes from radio interviews I get that. I wouldn't get people contacting me unless I put myself out there. I don't do it for that purpose, but that's what comes from it. So you want to give yourself a presence out there, and they'll, they just kind of call you out of the blue. They email, they call. I'm real easy to find, too. They can find my phone number. They can find my email address. Can't find my street address, though. I carry that puppy. But they can, I made sure of that. But they can that I make myself very easy to. I mean, I don't put my telephone number on, you know, like about.me, which, again, you guys should all have pages. Anybody out there listening, if you're an author, absolutely about.me is one of the things that aggregates higher than anything else on search engines. So you, it's just a landing page. It's easy to do. Take you 5 minutes. But I'm out there. I make myself. It's one thing I've always done is I've made myself. I've given myself a presence out there, and it's all about reach, and I think that that's important. I want readers. You know, I don't want to write a book and have five people read it, and I think it's important. I think knowledge is important. I think, you know, like I mentioned Sunshine before, that Sunshine on the Biggie case and Sunshine on the Tupac case, and poor Susan Berman, I wrote about her. She was a mob daughter out of L.A., and that case is unsolved, and we all pretty much know who did that one, too. So, you know, Sunshine on that, too, as I just came out with the second edition in that book. And that's the one that won the award. And, I want to see her get justice. So that's my thing, too, is for these unsolved cases, it helps get the word out.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, Kathy. How do you feel the state today of investigative journalists? Do you think that is a breed that's not as powerful as it was back in the day?
Oh, I think you still got, you know, I know a lot of them. I think that, you know, it's easy to be lazy, but boy, if you make a mistake today, you know, more people than just the readers of your print publication see it in the morning, you know, so you actually have to watch your P's and Q's pretty closely. I'm a journalist who blogs. I don't consider bloggers journalists. You know, they're not. I mean, you have to be a member of the working press, you know, a daily newspaper, weekly newspaper that's real. And even if it's an online, I mean, the Christian Science Monitor, who I used to freelance for, they got rid of their print, and they only come out, I think, 3 days a week online, but they're still the Christian Science Monitor. They're still in the newspaper. They've got investigative journalists. You've got, all the big newspapers, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, LA Times isn't quite what it used to be, but you still have, you know, people are practicing real journalism, even though you've got some folks who call themselves that. That doesn't make them a journalist. Uh-huh. You know, you've got to be out there, you know, writing and getting assignments. Even if you freelance, it's got to be for some, they're news outlets. It can be a news, it can be, I mean, I freelance for the Associated Press. I also, for a decade, freelance for Reuters. So you can still freelance for those guys. They still take stringers. They still take correspondence. You can still break into journalism. You know, it's just there's a fine line. You know, there's a difference between blogging and journalism. There's certainly a major difference. I mean, almost anybody can blog for, you know, at least the American Huffington Post. And so there are journalists that are blogging, but if you go on there and you'll notice that they call them correspondents. Big difference. Mm-hmm. Like I blog, I had to interview 3 times to blog for Psychology Today. You know, so they're very picky. And my editor, I was at Forbes for 2.5 years as a blogger, and the editor there came from some of the biggest publications in the nation. I think Newsweek, you know, some of the editors come from there. So they come from real journalism. But they've got some bloggers who aren't, you know, they're just experts. And they make you'll notice on all of those blogs that there is, you see the differentiation. They point it out by, you can be called a contributor, but you're certainly not going to be, you know, called a correspondent. Big difference.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I mean, Anderson Cooper got his start by, he couldn't get hired by anybody, so he just went out into the field and started stringing and getting some gigs, you know, and became a foreign correspondent as a freelancer. That's how he started his, you know, and he was doing journalism. But it's, you know, you've got to make sure that you don't, you know, that you do it the right way.
Right.
Like you've got radio, you know, radio news reports too. You still have people in radio still, you know, they're journalists too because they're writing news. You've got to go out and interview people and all of that. So, you know, you're still doing it the old-fashioned way. I still pick up the phone and call people, you know.
Uh-huh.
So that's the difference, I think.
Yeah.
That was a long answer to your question.
No, yeah, it was a good answer. Maybe
y'all taking notes out there. Look,
yeah,
y'all taking notes out there. I hope y'all, she done dropped some jewels, some of y'all authors that are listening. Did y'all take some notes? She done ran down some sites. She done gave some promotion points, and she done ran it down. All right.
Yeah, I'm not stingy with information, so I'm happy to share.
Look, I'm over here setting up pages while we talking. I'm like, what she said? How many awards did she say she have? I don't have any of those. I need to pay attention to what she doing. I don't know. My auntie, I haven't heard of some of those places. I was like, oh, let me get on the job. What kind of stuff am I doing over here?
I already sent my email. It'll be the first email you see when you open up.
Very cool. Good. I will respond.
That is awesome. That is great. It's good having you on here because, you know, we write a lot of fiction. We write from our imagination. You know, some stuff, you know, we get from, you know, different experiences in life and things we see. But like you said, it's a different feel when you're writing from what you think could happen in that situation versus standing there looking at it all unfold over and over and over again. And that's a different type of gift because not only are you reporting, like, it takes you, I'm quite sure, through different emotions because you're meeting families. You're not just seeing crimes like we see them on television and stuff. Like, you're standing right there, you're interviewing mothers who are heartbroken and families who have lost. And you're just sitting right there in real time, you know, dealing with that and writing those emotions. That's a whole different experience for an author because even with us making them up, we still have to go into emotions, but actually reliving it and feeling the pain and hearing the cries and, you know, the injustice of the situation, I'm quite sure that puts you in a whole different headspace when you're creating and then when you're done. How do you feel like when you're done with the story, with writing something that's so real and so close to your spirit because you're, like, right there in the middle of the action? How do you detach yourself?
Well, it's sad. I mean, I go to scenes, and I mean, I've been to more home-sized scenes than I care to count. But But I, you know, I'm a real detail kind of person, so I see details, and I'll stay away from the family initially. I don't go to those anymore, but I did as a reporter. And, you know, I mean, even dealing with Biggie Smalls' mom, you know, I knew that I had to, and I also talked to Fannie Shakur's, her daughter and her attorney, and then I was on a show with Fannie later on a BET show, but, I'm very delicate not to get in their faces, you know, but because they're grieving. But a lot of times it's the last time the person will ever be written about. And so what I try to do in the books and with news stories as well when I used to do it, but with the books I try to flesh out the people and bring them to life. And I think if you read The Killing of Tupac Shakur, Tupac comes alive for you. I mean, I like the guy, you know, and I think it's pitiful that his case hasn't been solved, but he was a complicated guy. He was a genius. He was so talented. It was unbelievable, and it's a huge loss that he's not here anymore. But I try to bring them to life and do right by them. And so I think that I almost feel like I know them. You know, Susan Berman, I went to her grave and stood there and wished I'd brought a flower. You know, and you know, you become emotionally connected to the person. You get to know them. You get into their most intimate details about them. And, you know, even their finances, you know, who, you know, girlfriends, boyfriends, you learn more about them than probably their parents knew, you know. So it's very personal what you know, I do, and it's very biographical. You know, writing a true crime book is very biographical. And so that's what I try to do is you know, do right by them. And I also, the perpetrators, you know, I bring those guys to life too. You know, tell everybody, you know, you learn who they are too, as creeped out as that sometimes creeps me out, you know, because there's some dark, dark people. I don't like writing about dead children, dead young children. I don't like writing about them. I think it's dark, and I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to do the Casey Anthony book. I don't, you know, it's dark. I'll let somebody else do it. To me, it's too sad.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Wow.
But it's, so that's kind of how I, you know, I do, you know, in some ways I'm automatically detached when I first get in, but once I dig in and I start, I mean, I get choked up. You know, I get, you know, you get choked up sometimes. It's sad. It's hard to watch families grieve, and they're in so much pain, you know.
Is there one case that you've covered that really touched you, Kathy, that just stood out from all the rest?
There is on the west side of Las Vegas. If you guys are, you know, it's kind of the ghetto. They're trying to build it up, though. There was a teenage boy, big, big, tall guy, probably 16, 17, and their his grandparents were killed, both of them, and his uncle did it. And I was at the crime scene, and I was standing next to the homicide cop, and this kid came up. He just heard about it. We'd been there, you know, you'd hurry up and wait at homicide scenes, and this kid came up, and he just dropped to his knees and just, oh my God, it was so sad. He just bawled like a baby, and it was, you know, horrible. And then they brought the grandparents out in body bags. You
wow.
know, the whole family just fell apart. It was just so sad. At Tupac's, the day he died, I was at the hospital, and it was, his name was Baby something. He was like 19-year-old, a backup singer for Tupac. And when word started spreading that he, you know, before the hospital came out to announce it, word started spreading, you could just tell. There was just a different feel. You knew something was going on, and he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And he went out on the curb and just broke down. He was one of Tupac's, you know, backup singers, and he sat down on the curb and just fell apart, and it was so sad. He's just a kid. You know, he's just 19 years old. He's a kid, and it was just unbelievable all week, and they'd been at the hospital all week. You know, it was just sad. That, to me, really, that was very, very sad. I included it in the book. So it touches you, you know. It's raw. They're just, I mean, it still chokes me up just thinking about that kid, you know, when he found out that his grandparents were gone. It's just this, you know, it's over. There's nothing you can do to change it. You just want, you know, 1 minute they're happy and the next minute the whole world falls apart when they learn the news.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
Kathy, I have a question for you. Have you thought about going into politics or running for office?
Oh, no. I'm too opinionated. No, I'll leave that to somebody else. In politics in this town, I mean, I know in this town, but across the country, I mean, you got to take payola. I don't think any of them, I think they become corrupt. You've got the lobbyists, and they're not voting the way they want to vote. They're voting because they've got to stay in office. And maybe they do some good things now and then, but I think some little brown bags with money in them, you know, pass hands. And I think that, I just think it does. And, you know, if it's not being done by the, you know, lobbyists, it's special interests and whatever else. It's not pure. It's, you know, and they may have, and then sometimes they're anointed. They're told to run, you know, and you know. So a lot of the politicians, they don't have an authentic thought, you know. It's somebody else's thought. Somebody's telling them what to say and do, and they're beholden to all these people. So I mean, look at Congress. It's a big joke. Those guys can't get anything done. It's all about they're obsessed. With Obama, obsessed. He still can't believe a black man is in office. So, in the highest office of the land.
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious to watch. So and hopefully it won't be the first, but it's, you know, they can't get anything done. They're just stumbling over each other, you know, and themselves. So I look at it as more comical. I love Bill Maher. You know, I like to, you know, watch him just go after him and anybody else and Stewart and those guys who do the same thing. That's the kind of politics I like to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think writing is a noble profession, and I think, you know, not everybody may agree with that, but I think journalism is a noble profession, and certainly, you know, the books I write, true crime, is almost an extension of that, and blogging, and hopefully we make a difference that way.
That's a great thing. That is a good thing that you have all these, you know, these wonderful gifts at your hand, and you're able to see a lot of things firsthand, which is much better than just hearing about it, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, you come in contact with some very, you know, gruesome or, you know what I'm saying, not so happy situations, but you have a different type of mindset because you're right there, so it gives you different types of views. And, you know, versus sitting there listening to it on the news, I mean, you're like, man, I was standing there this afternoon, like, none of that happened. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's interesting how they run. Yeah, sometimes you see them run with the ball to the wrong goalpost. But I've seen, you know, the Suge Knight thing, for example, is,
wow,
you know, yeah, I mean, there was this spook.
Did you go cover,
you know,
that? Were you over there?
No, I've been following it, but I haven't made any phone calls or anything. But, I mean, it's interesting, the LAPD is the one. I mean, that man, somebody said, oh, he gets away with everything. Gets away with what? Every time you turn around, they're pulling him over smoking weed in his car. I mean, he's been in prison a lot off and on since Tupac was gone. You know, every time he turns around, he's violated parole, probation.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get him every, unlike Rick Ross, who has, you know, dots his I's and crosses his T's and isn't doing anything illegal. But
right.
they wanted him in a bad way. Boy, they wanted Suge Knight. Now they're on the other side of the fence, having to investigate who tried to kill him.
Right,
isn't
right.
that a flip? That's quite
wow.
a... Isn't that?
Yeah, I'm wondering how that's going to work out.
They can't stand him, exactly. Oh, you know, Suge doesn't part. He doesn't cooperate. So, and you know, my thing is, I put on Facebook yesterday when somebody wrote about it, and I said, well, you know, whoever shot him, their name right, because they don't. They little do they know that man retaliates. He may not do it, but he's still got homies in the hood. So. And he and he was, you know, I mean, he was blooded up, you know, with the blood. So there was a bloodbath after Tupac was shot for 11 days out in Compton. It was, who do you think pulled the trigger on that one? He just ordered it, and it was the Crips and the Bloods going after each other, killing each other right and left. And I don't know how many people, that was a bloodbath that happened after, in retaliation for Tupac's shooting, and it was the Bloods against the Crips, and because, you know, the Crips killed Tupac. And we think, they think that Suge's not still hooked up and that there's not going to be any retaliation.
Mm.
But just like he said, you know, to CNN after Tupac was shot, oh, no, we take care of things ourselves. It'll iron itself out.
Mm.
And they got two of them. They got two of the people who were in the car. So it's, you know, 18 months, you know, 18 months later, Orlando Anderson gets dead, you know, so the shooter in the Tupac case. So I think, you know, there might be some little retaliation, so whoever it is better hide.
Because
Suge Knight's alive. So that would be, yeah, he doesn't sit back. You don't mess with him. So, and he's got guys who will take care of it for him. I mean, he, you know, there was something that happened with, you know, somebody I know, and, you know, Suge Knight said, "Do you want me to take care of that for you?" No, it's okay.
Hmm.
And what's that mean?
I got it. Thank you.
Just makes the phone call. Yeah, so I do think we're going to see the whoever did it, and they've got it apparently very clear on video, and if they can't ferret him out, then they'll just put it out there to the world, and the name of that person will come out real soon. And Suge will know too, won't he? Well, he already knows. No doubt already knows who it is, and he best be hiding in somebody's basement.
Wow.
He retaliates.
Wow. Just wow. I guess we just had to watch the news to see what unfolds on that one.
And nobody's written about that, which I find fascinating. Nobody's written about that.
Wow.
You know. Yeah.
Watch the news. You better ask Kathy.
Yeah, I'm not even going to watch the news anymore. From this day forward, Kathy, I'm just going to call you at the end of the night and say, so what's going on in the world? She said, wow.
Look at me. Let's just kind of analyze
it. You want the truth?
Let's look at the past and his past record and all that and what his M.O. is, and that's his M.O. So, you know, he best be careful. It's called, you know, don't go to a restaurant and, you know, sit down in the middle, put your back against the wall. The news. So, yeah, it's interesting stuff.
Did you ever feel at any time uneasy while you're covering those high profile cases? Because Tupac and Biggie, those were heavy, and then you wrote a book about it. So you're revealing, you know, a lot of different things that maybe people don't know or anything like that. Have you ever felt uneasy about those projects?
No, there was one before the book came out, when it was publicized that it was a Tupac book was coming out. Somebody said, and I don't know if it was an email or I can't remember what it was. But the book came out in 97, so it wasn't on the internet. But it might have been in an email. Somebody ought to cap your R,
like
middle-aged white hoe. That's and I'm like, oh my. But once the book came out and everybody read it and they saw how fair I was to him, and then I told both sides of the story, then, you know, I get great respect from that community, and the respect is mutual. And so I, you know, I just try to tell the story. I don't try to, you know, hang anybody. I just tell it, you know, by the facts, and I get a little analytical. But now I think I've been in some hairy situations. I mean, I went down to Somalia, so that was pretty hairy. I won't go into the hood at night. You know, I won't go into Compton alone, you know, but I might have Rick with me or Reggie Wright. But well, just because it's not my, they're just
the neighborhood.
Yeah,
I won't go either. Shoot, you ain't talking about nothing. Yeah, I won't be out here either. So you don't feel like you saying anything that's weird. None of us.
Yeah, I mean, I went into it's called the Naked Village here, Meadows Village here, and it's Hispanic, and well, a lot of white people there too, but it's just mixed. last two, and it's, I mean, it's bad, bad, and it's right behind the Stratosphere Tower, and off Las Vegas Boulevard, and a photographer and I were there on assignment once, and these guys start circling, these guys start circling in a car around us. We were at this park, you know, they had like coyote fencing all over it, you know, razor fencing like it's a prison, and he had very expensive equipment. He goes, they're eyeballing me for my equipment. It was daytime. We got the heck out of there. Scared him because he said, these guys are eyeballing my equipment. And sometimes you get into sort of little, I mean, you go to crime-ridden places, and so you've got to be, you know, kind of careful, you know. Yeah, so I had people telling me, don't go to Bed-Stuy. I had this friend, and I rode with the New York City Bicycle Club, and a couple of them, we were out one day riding, and a couple of them goes, shouldn't go into Bed-Stuy, you know. What's wrong with Bed-Stuy? You know, it was fun. So, I went in, and, they were kind of even nicer to me. I went to where Biggie's house was, and his uncle was living there at the time in the walk-up, and, you know, the corner market, and I went to the Mike's barbershop that he rapped about and talked to those guys, and people couldn't have been nicer to me, you know. So I don't get frightened by that. I get frightened by criminals, you know. But I mean, in my neighborhood, somebody was, you know, I mean, it's everywhere. Somebody was following me to try to steal one of my dogs, you know, one night. That creeped me out. But that's, you know, that's so it can happen anywhere, you know. I'm not afraid of too many things.
Right. You shouldn't be.
I'm always looking in my rearview mirror.
Yes, I would. No, that's right. You better look at all of the mirrors. Just check them all. What you write about, I'll be checking everything. I'm like, well, you want this to happen here.
Probably checks off the police more than anybody. So who knows, you know, with that. But
yes.
Step on
absolutely.
Your toes a little bit.
So please let them know where they can find your work, what projects you have coming up next, if you're going to be on tour or anything where they can see you. Please highlight that.
Well, I've got I will be having a book launch, Unconditional Honor, Wounded Warriors and Their Dogs, about these guys coming back from, you know, war and combat, and they're getting service dogs because, you know, PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. It's kind of off my beaten path, but that's my current book. My next one is I'm going to write about the, I call him the slow cooker, Lomita, California, a woman was murdered, and the wife, and he was the chef, and he boiled her remains to get rid of the body. Yeah, she was already dead. That happened in Lomita, California. So I'll be covering that case. And you can find me on KathyScott.com. You can find me on Facebook, Kathy Scott with the number 10 behind it, Kathy with the C. You can spell me wrong and spell my name wrong and still find me. And Amazon.com, of course, I've got an author's page there, and my tweets and everything, and my tweets and my blogs all go to my author page on Amazon, so you can see me there too. If you guys aren't hooked up on author pages, you give me an email and I'll tell you how to do it.
And all right. Yeah, I know Lisa's on top of all of that. She'll be sending out mass emails from us all because I'm quite sure I don't know how to work whatever it is that you're sending us to. So, yeah, I'm going to need Alicia to help me out with that. I know she's writing it all down. Tomorrow I'll have homework, thanks to Kathy Scott. No, 3 o'clock in the morning I'll have homework. I hear my phone singing off, and it'll be Alicia talking about something. Could you do this? Could you do that? Could you put this over here? You know what Kathy said? Did you sign it?
I will not accept this abuse, Baby Capri. But I always sleep. I go to sleep. Between 6
o'clock
and 12 noon.
True.
And then
when she's going to sleep, I'm waking up, and then I need instructions on the instructions that she gave me before she fell asleep. And then I'm like, hello, where are you? And she pops up like, oh, well, did you do what I asked you? I couldn't figure it out. So, yeah, this is how our day goes. So, yeah, that's a good thing. You shared a lot. Tonight,
thank
you for coming with your open and sharing with us and helping our authors who write in that genre to really understand, you know, the different work that you do and the different research that you do. So definitely, if you're on the line and you're writing crime fiction or nonfiction, you know, definitely listen to this interview again and take some notes on everything that Kathy has shared with us, because she gave out a wealth of information for people who are writing about crime and the elements of crime, because it's different when you're writing it in real time versus, you know, how we may write our particular crime. So definitely, if you're going to change genres or you need any type of help with writing crime and fiction and nonfiction, please listen to the interview again. Take note, she gave us a wealth of information, even on promoting. that was really, really good of you.
You're welcome.
What is your greatest legacy that you would like to leave behind at the end of the day?
I made a difference in some way. I mean, I'm in animal welfare. I went down to Katrina. Some of my best moments are, you know, in the water, in the field, helping other people's pets. We went down there and we saved other people's pets, and they're near and dear to me. But I think I'm proud of the work I've done in the Tupac Shakur case, and I think that's, you know, I'm best known for that book. But I just think Susan Berman, I'm going to keep writing about her because it's just pitiful. You know, again, I use that word, but, you know, a crime is unsolved, and it's not that hard to do it, and just go indict the guy. And so I think that I made a difference and maybe gave someone who didn't have a voice, a way to speak from the grave.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's powerful. That is powerful.
Oh, thank you.
So many have fallen, and no one's around to care about their case or hear their case or hear their stories. You know, parents sitting around wondering what happened, you know, to my child. And they never get any resolve, you know.
They never get
any resolve. And for you to take on different cases and highlight them and write about them, so at least the family, you know, at least the family could kind of get more information, because journalists dig up tons of information. I mean,
yeah.
You all come across things that the cops and stuff probably be like, where the heck did they get that from? So
yeah, we get stuff they don't have. Yeah, but people come out of the woodwork and give you things. And it's real. I mean, it's like I don't manufacture stuff. I mean, there are people still out there right now manufacturing stuff in the Tupac case, and, you know, because they want to do a book or a movie or something like that. And it's like I'm not manufacturing anything. If I stumble across it, then I report it. I'll come out with another edition eventually. And we just did a third edition with lots of new information in it, and I'm going to do a second edition in the Biggie Smalls book. It's out of print, and we're going to re-release it and independently. And I'm hitting the pavement all over again on that one, and looking at some police documents and everything else that I now have access to. So, you know, I try to get to the real facts, not some bogus stuff that somebody wants to make money off of, putting it out there. You know, I mean, there's fake stuff out there, and people believe it. You know, and so I don't even entertain it. It's like, nope, it's all a bunch of hooey. So I try to go after the facts. You know, and in Tupac's case, it's real simple. You know, you have motive and opportunity, and, you know, you beat somebody up, and they turn around and they retaliate and shoot at you, and that's all that was. It was street justice. It's a real simple case, and they won't solve it. Very simple.
Wow.
But I think it's like sometimes the family at this point, they just want closure, you know. Yes. And like you said, some of the evidence is just staring you in the face, but just close the case. It's like that's all a parent or a family member wants.
Yeah.
Closure.
Fannie's not that way. I think for Valetta Wallace, I think she would be at peace if her son's murder were solved. Fannie is all about Tupac's legacy, and she knows that even if they officially solve the case, it's not going to bring him back. And her thing is to keep his music and his work and his legacy alive, and who he was while he was alive, and spread the word that way, which is the way to go. You know, you whereas if Fannie is Valetta, Mrs. Wallace absolutely wants to see justice in her son's case, and I'm sure Fannie would too, but she's not focusing her energy on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She's all about keeping his legacy alive, and I think she's done a really good job in that respect.
Yeah, and you know what? They're both two different women, you know.
Yeah,
and Tupac's mom, she
she comes from that era of fight, you know, that era of black power, of, you know, so she kind of knows the different dynamics that happen, you know, in that street life, you know what I'm saying? She understood her son. And I think it's
he was his mother's son for sure, you know.
Yes, that's a whole different thing. Not to say that Miss Wallace, no slight to her and what she knew about her son, but Tupac's mother's fight was a different type of fight. Like from before the womb, you know, she was out there, you know, in the street, going to prison and fighting, and you know what I'm saying.
She represented herself in prison. You know, she represented herself without an attorney, and she had a federal murder charge against her because of some bombing, and she won it. She was acquitted, and she represented. I mean, when does that? That was in the 60s. When does that happen today? That a black woman can represent herself in federal court in New York and win. Unbelievable.
Powerful.
That's when she was a Black Panther. Yeah. So his mother was a revolutionary, and he was clearly his mother's son. And, you know, so it's, you know, and who knows what he would have become. We'll never know, you know. Never know. But far, far different than what Biggie would have become. He was as different from Tupac as the two mothers are. You know?
Right.
Because Tupac was all about change.
Mm-hmm.
He was speaking at universities already. You know, he was all about change and improving and people being on their own and making a living. And, you know, he was all about that. You know, he may have been rapping about whatever, but he was, you know, he was a soulful guy. Bright as all get out.
They were both Gemini, too.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And totally two different personalities.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like you said, they were definitely their mother's son. And we thank you for calling in. We thank you for sharing your spirit with us. You have a beautiful spirit, and we thank you for the work, you know, that you do, your contributions to literature and really to society, and what you do at going and finding out this information and helping these families heal, and like you said, giving people a voice beyond the grave. And we thank you so, so much for that. You are welcome here anytime you have any questions.
Thank you so much. Well, I'll call on you guys next time then. I have a book coming out. So thank you so much.
Yes,
I really appreciate it. And email me and I'll give you some more tips.
Thank you so much. Please continue to enjoy.
I'm already in your inbox.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, you guys take care.
I have to check your email first.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You have a good day, Kathy. Thank you.
You too. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was powerful. That was powerful. She has a wealth of information. She is.
Yeah, that was powerful. I ain't gonna lie. It was so powerful. I was about to hang up with her on y'all.
I was saying good night to you. Aaron was like, good night, I'm done, thank you. I had my
the show's over. I got information to chase down.
Definitely, because that was awesome, man. You know, she was able to share with us, you know, the procedure and the process, which is, you know, people need that, especially us as authors, because, hey, you know, when do you get to actually sit down with someone who actually is on the scene with crime, you know what I'm saying, pretty much helping solve it? Because like she said, they'll give you information as a journalist or someone they trust, you know, that before they give it to the police, because they're like, I don't trust them with this information. So she has, you know, sat down and had privy to, you know, some of the most historical murders in our country, you know, dealing with in our era, you know, in our generation, period.
Uh-huh.
You know, Tupac and Biggie, that was big, and that didn't just touch urban communities. Like, that touched people all over, you know, other countries who love their music. Like, that was not isolated to, oh, you live in the ghetto. No, that music and their legacy and what they stood for went all over the world. So for her to sit in the room with those parents and be on the scene with those crimes and then write books about them, that's very, very powerful. So we definitely thank her for bringing the light to it from someone who was actually there. You know, you got 500 stories from everybody, but from someone who was actually standing close to the hospital room, you know, when Pop passed
she
away.
She said they called,
you know,
her, and she went right out to the crime scene when he was shot.
Yes. And then to talk to the parents and interview, you know, people involved and be right there, you know. So we thank her for her contributions. That's powerful. And we thank everyone for listening.
Tonight is our special edition of Writing Royalty Radio. We had the beautiful, wonderful Miss Kathy Scott. She has tons of work out there. Please check out her crime fiction novel. She's worked with Freeway Rick Ross. She's wrote about Tupac as well as Biggie, and she has other crime thrillers. Just Google her and fall in between her pages. It's been a wonderful evening. Thank you for listening, and good night. Drop that beat, Aaron.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.